It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. All right, the weekend's over, and it's back to work. It's More In Monday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and HeadOn.live are where we live. That's where you go if you would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, madcap, screwball, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yes. Just click on chat room, pick out a screen name and a password if you've never been there before. Otherwise, use the one that you always use. And be part of, what happens during the 3 hours in which this program is live and folks are chatting away in that whole interactive cyber thingy, you know? Yeah. You'll be greeted by Steve from Georgistan and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave, and others will be wandering by as the program continues. We don't have a tardy bell here or anything. So, you know, bang, there's VT Blom. See how it works? Yeah. And there will be more. There will indeed be more. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. The first full week of March is upon us. Spring is coming, spring is coming, spring is coming. I just keep telling myself spring is coming. We had a couple of beautiful days here. High bluebird, blue sky kind of days. Didn't get particularly warm, but it was a reminder that that nice will be here eventually. We'll probably still have to make our way through April and stuff. And like I said, we don't plant gardens until after Mother's Day. But it's coming. It's going to be here. Thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to James in Illinois and to Paul and to Catherine. Thank you, all three of you, for your subscriptions. You are partial sponsors of the program this evening. And as such, well, you go a long way toward about a week's worth of the programming here at the Horn. It's a slim day on the calendar. If you would like to become a PayPal subscriber, then this would be a good day to do it. The fifth day of the month is kind of lean, as you just heard. Under the best of circumstances, we'd have 20 $10 a month subscribers on any given broadcast day. I don't think we've got a single day in which we knock out an entire day's worth of programming. But it would be great to, you know, let's make the fifth of the month one of those days, maybe. It's real easy. You just go to the PayPal interface. There's a little box that you check that says make this a recurring monthly donate. I forget exactly what the language is. Let me see here. Maybe I can tell you. Maybe I can quote it directly. Working. Oh, it just says, I would like this donation to automatically repeat each month. Yeah. Just click that little box. Put the, if you want to make it $10, just click the other little button there. we don't have any $1,000 automatic monthly contributors. No. Mr. Soros is doing other things, and but anyway, yeah, you get the idea. As it stands, we try to raise $200 every evening, and we pulled up just an itsy bitsy teensy weensy tiny little bit short last Friday. So we've got $25 left over from last week. So we'll try to raise $225 this evening. That's pretty much where it is, and all I can say is that, you know, we exist from month to month, and consequently, we determine the horn's existence from month to month. Be nice if it was otherwise. It would make it a lot easier to do this program. Hell, I'd like to be able to do this program without doing the whole, you know, talk about fundraising thing every evening. But I can't. Not until, you know, we're on a more sustainable footing. So there it is. $225 to raise. Is it too much to think that maybe we could do this in the next 54 minutes? And then at least have 2 hours of fundraising free broadcasting instead of me having to mention it, you know, constantly. I don't know. But that's where it is, you know, and the PayPal interfaces are at headon.live and headonradionetwork.com. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, well, you can send checks or money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob. Because Boss Man Wayne handles all that stuff. He goes to the post office and picks up checks and money orders and sends them off to the credit union. And, if you'll let me know, I'll let him know. And that address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. And that's how we keep it all going. Like I said, more folks have wandered into the chat room. There's Big Toe and Silent R. Lamar wandering in. Good evening, folks. Glad to see you there. I had a perfectly reasonable Moran Monday set up. Pretty much ready to go until about 2 hours ago. When a guy named Sam Nunberg decided to cut in the line and run out in front of all the other Morans. Oh, yeah. So we've got that to deal with. And so here's the skinny on it, in case you haven't already heard. Sam Nunberg, a former campaign aide and a former Trump aide, was interviewed by Robert Mueller's team at some length. He's connected to people like Steve Bannon and Roger Stone and, well, basically the whole dirty gang. And so, consequently, the Mueller team handed him a subpoena in which they wanted all of his emails and communications going back to November the 1st, 2015, communications with Donald Trump, communications with Hope Hicks, communications with Steve Bannon, with Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Corey Lewandowski, Michael Cohen, like I said, the whole gang. And today, he melted all the way down to the ground and started calling cable news outlets. He called MSNBC. He called CNN. I'm not sure, but I think he may have been even called and been interviewed by SpongeBob. But what he was trying to get at, or what he was saying, is I'm not gonna comply with this subpoena. The subpoena is due, returnable, as of Friday, I believe. And he says he'll tear it up on air. That he'd rather go to jail than waste 80 or 50 or whatever hours of his life going through his emails. Well, you know, that's okay. I mean, a subpoena ducis tecum is a rather polite legal way of saying, you know, listen, we need the information and we're going to use the legal process to compel you to provide it. But that's not all Robert Mueller has. There are also search warrants. And Sam Nunberg will not like a search warrant any more than he likes going in front of the grand jury. And, of course, there's always the concept of civil contempt if he refuses to show up. Federal marshals can go and escort him to the nearest secure lockdown facility and put him in jail like Ken Starr did with Susan McDougal back during the cleanest hunt. And so over on the for-profit media this afternoon, the place has been just buzzing with, why would he do this? My goodness gracious, has he taken leave of his senses? Is he engaged in afternoon drinking? Well, there was another story out there that I saw today that I had planned on at least mentioning. It's not really a Moran story, but more of just a piece of news that might sneak past the hard-working Johnny-on-the-spot folks in the for-profit media, and God knows it'll blow right past the likes of, precious Caitlin Johnstone. The dateline for the story is today. The story comes from The Guardian. Headline, former Russian spy critically ill in UK after exposure to substance. Substance. One of the two people critically ill in a Salisbury... Should I do this with the English accent, or shall we dispense? Now let's dispense. After a suspected exposure... No, let's don't. One of the two people critically ill in a Salisbury hospital after suspected exposure to an unknown substance is a Russian man who was exchanged in a high-profile spy swap in 2010, The Guardian understands. Sergei Skripal, 66, was one of four Russians exchanged for 10 deep-cover sleeper agents planted by Moscow in the U.S., Wiltshire police said that a man in his 60s and a woman in her 30s were found unconscious on a bench in the Maltings shopping centre in Salisbury on Sunday afternoon. Temporary Assistant Chief Constable Craig Holden said that the pair were believed to have been known to each other and were in critical condition. He added, "This has not been declared as a counter-terrorism incident, and we would urge people not to speculate. However, I must emphasize that we retain an open mind, and we will continue to review this position." A passerby, Freya Church, saw the pair at the shopping center. She told the BBC, "On the bench there was a couple, an older guy and a younger girl. She was leant on him. It looked like she'd passed out. He was doing some strange hand movements, looking up to the sky. I felt anxious, like I should step in, but they looked so out of it. They looked like they had been taking something quite strong." Public health authorities have been notified. A nearby restaurant has been closed. People talked about what a nice chap he seemed. He would always say hello if he walked past. When he moved in, he invited us all over for a housewarming party. I imagine he invited the whole street. Been here for quite a while. People came and went from the house, but I didn't pay much attention. He was always walking past, but he did sometimes drive his BMW 3 Series. He never really looked smart. He looked very casual. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the skinny. He's a former Russian army colonel. He was convicted of passing identities of Russian agents working undercover in Europe to MI6 back in 2006. That means convicted by the Russians. And they sentenced him to 13 years in jail for spying for Britain. And then he was he was part of that spy swap. And some people are speculating, that's the right word for it, speculating that he and the 30-something woman looked like they were nodding, and maybe it was fentanyl. Now, I had taken note of that story a few hours ago, and in the midst of all of the for-profit media blather about afternoon drinking and has Sam Nunberg taken leave of his senses? I thought, no, maybe this is conspicuous. This is a matter of conspicuous presence. Screaming in the middle of the street. Hiding in plain sight. Seems pretty obvious somebody's scared to live and be Jesus out of Sam Nunberg, and I'm guessing it wasn't Bob Mueller. Because up until a day or so ago, back when he was leaking the subpoena to various media outlets, he seemed perfectly happy to cooperate. And then today, this. In particular, though, from one media outlet to the next, things just got weirder and weirder and weirder. Among other things, he pointed out that not only he, but apparently Steve Bannon thinks that Trump probably did do something illegal somewhere along the way during the campaign. Mm-hmm. And by the time he was talking to, I think it was on CNN, he referred to Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, as an idiot. I think idiot was the word. Yes, idiot. And welcome to the party, Sam. Yep. All of this made for a very bad day for Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, who just really didn't like, I mean, if I thought all my planning for Maureen Monday got ruined, her afternoon live fest just went straight to hell.
Further than that right now. Kristen.
Sure, I want to ask you about some breaking news that we're just getting. Sam Nunberg, the president's former campaign aide, is refusing a subpoena by a grand jury, and he just said on MSNBC moments ago, I think he, meaning the president, may have done something during the election, but I don't know that for sure. Your reaction?
Well, I definitely think he doesn't know that for sure because he's incorrect. As we've said many times before, there was no collusion with the Trump campaign. Anything further on what his actions are, he hasn't worked at the White House, so I certainly can't speak to him or the lack of knowledge that he clearly has.
What's your reaction to not cooperating with the grand jury, refusing this subpoena? Would you encourage all of these witnesses to come forward and tell their stories?
Look, I'm not going to weigh into somebody that doesn't work at the White House. I can tell you from our perspective, we are fully cooperating with the Office of the Special Counsel. We're going to continue to do so. And I'll reiterate once again, the reason we are so comfortable doing so is because there is absolutely no collusion within the Trump campaign in any foreign government.
Sorry, let me just ask you one on trade. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross was asked if there was any possibility that the president could change his mind on these new tariffs. He said whatever his final decision is what will happen. What he has said, if he says something different, it'll be something different. If this was a carefully thought out policy, Sarah, why the mixed messaging?
I don't think there is mixed messaging.
No, there's no mixed messaging. The only thing that's mixed is all the various and sundry little spirochetes that are running around and running out of brain cells to eat there inside the noggin of the Gotham Gump. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe somebody got to Sam Nunberg. Maybe somebody. Skeert him? Maybe he felt like screaming in public was a way to keep from, getting a fentanyl dart in the neck? Because it's getting just weirder and weirder and weirder. The New Yorker profiled Christopher Steele earlier today. He of the dossier. And it turns out, according to reporter Jane Meyer, that he wrote a different memo, Steele did, based on information he had from his sources inside Russia, claiming that high-ranking Russians noted that they had had a say in who got appointed to what cabinet positions in the Trump administration. In particular, it had to do with the fact, this late 2016 memo, it had to do with who would be Secretary of State. Trump was apparently leaning toward Bishop Willard Romney, and it was the Russians who nixed the deal, instead stating their preference for their dear friend and holder of the Russian Medal of Freedom of Mother Russia, or whatever it is, Rexon Tillerson, who, by the way, has noted that he really doesn't think there's anything we can do about the Russians meddling in our elections. Gosh, oh golly gee, whatever would that possibly be? He can't imagine it if it's out there. What? Who knows? Mm-hmm. In her report, Jane Meyer wrote, "This memo, which did not surface publicly with the others, is shorter than the rest and is based on one source identified as a senior Russian official. The official said that he was merely relaying talk circulating in the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but what he'd heard was astounding. People were saying that the Kremlin had intervened to block Trump's initial choice for Secretary of State Mitt Romney because the bishop, Bishop Willard, was a notorious Russian hardliner." There's nothing to it. Gosh, you know. It's all just made up by the... what's the official term? The captive state media of the empire. That's how they talk over there in those weirdo people, journalist type, whatever they are. Yeah, I'm sure the poisoned colonel there fighting for his life in London will be glad to know that the Russians don't do that sort of thing. Maybe he was just a junkie. Yeah, why not? Yeah. But so you heard there what Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags had to say about Sam Nunberg. Well, you know, we can't tell him to. I mean, he's not part of the administration, so, you know, we have no position on that. Really? The Office of the President of the United States has no position on whether people subpoenaed to appear before a grand jury should tell the truth. That's a new one. Ah, you know, it's okay. Go and lie like a, go lie like a rug. What do we care? I mean, the president is technically in charge of the Justice Department, you know, the boss of the Attorney General and stuff, who's the chief law enforcement officer of the country. But, you know, if somebody wants to show up and lie to a grand jury, that's okay by us. It's none of our, ain't none of our, never mind. Yeah, who the hell are we? I mean, we don't want to get all snotty or anything. But the for-profit media have been, this has just been, every program that aired after 4 o'clock went into sweat condition alpha, trying to reformat everything that happened to deal with this story. It really is kind of frustrating. So, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, as you heard, he doesn't know anything. What does he know? Nothing. We never heard of the guy. So then, Sam Nunberg, having gotten wind of what Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags said, well, he wasn't going to take it lying down. Oh, heck no.
You know what? You know what? If Sarah Huckabee wants to start debasing me, she's a joke. Okay, fine. Yeah, she's unattractive. She's a fat slob. Okay, fine. But that's irrelevant. The person she works for has a 30% approval rating. Okay? So if she wants to start attacking me, she can do that. That's fun. But we know it's a joke. Everybody knows it's a joke.
This got ugly real early. And I don't think it's going to get any prettier. One wonders, has he been booked on All In and Rachel and Lawrence O'Donnell? I'd be surprised if he hadn't been. And whatever he has to say, it's not about what he has to say, but about the why of him saying it. And so a lot of it is watch this space. But this certainly, people behave weirdly when they have nervous breakdowns. But they also behave strangely when they feel like maybe their life is at stake. And what was that comment from Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags anyway?
I've said many times before that there was no collusion with the Trump campaign.
Can we parse that for a minute? There was no collusion with the Trump campaign. Well, that really is kind of word salad, isn't it? And of course, the word collusion gets bandied about when it has no real actual meaning. The question is, were there conspiracies? Conspiracies to commit felonies. Conspiracies to obstruct justice. That's the question. And that's what remains to be seen. Other things, though, let's see. Scott and Punky with a note. Trump and company are to Wile E. Coyote as the Roadrunner is to Robert Mueller. Okay, I can live with that, but I prefer to think of Trump and company as Daffy Duck to Robert Mueller's Bugs Bunny.
He does not have to. He does not have to shoot me now. He can take me home and shoot me. Shoot me now. Pronoun trouble. You know the bit. Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Sammy Nunn. Bob, do you think Sam would fare better in prison in America than being on the street around the professional Russian poisoners? See, at least I'm not the only one that thinks this way. Which is kind of reassuring. It means that I'm not completely mad, or that if I have gone mad, others are going with me. It's always better to travel travel with friends. But Jesus, the morons today. They are. They're stacked up. Stacked up like cordwood. Yeah, oh, by the way, on top of it all, the story of Anastasia Vashukovich keeps not going away. New York Times picked up the story today. Oh, the state-run media of empire. Anastasia Vashukovich, who probably doesn't even really exist. Yes, she does. Oh, wait, we've got some analysis coming from Steve in New York. Here's what I think happened. Hey, Bob, I don't think Nunberg is scared. I'm fairly certain that what we've witnessed is probably the most serious case of obstruction of justice. I think the White House told the guy to do this, to dare Mueller to do something, because there will be something to get him off the hook. Think of this, Bob. His response to not wanting to comply with the subpoena is the "this is ridiculous" privilege outlined in the double secret probation addendum to the federal rules of evidence. He's counting on nothing happening. Well, he said as much. He said he doesn't think Bob Mueller will do anything, and if he did, it would be ridiculous. His privilege reason for not producing documents sounds an awful lot like what Sessions and others said when they said it was against Justice Department policy to not answer some questions. Nobody asserted any actual privilege. They just said it was against policy. And you know what? Nothing happened. No contempt of Congress. Nothing. I understand that. And the thing is, with this Republican Congress, Steve, you can tell them to go piss up a rope, and they will. If not, just sit there and piss themselves. Because the Republican majority has no interest whatsoever in doing its job, or even anything relating to being vaguely patriotic. Yeah? But that's the Congress. Congress and Mueller are different animals. Mueller has the power of civil contempt and criminal contempt. You might recall, like I said, that Susan McDougal went up the river for 18 long months for refusing to comply with Ken Starr's little pornographic fishing expedition. And then, when she got out of prison, reached the mandatory on civil contempt, Starr turned around and had her indicted for criminal contempt. Right? Yeah. Well, there's another question, courtesy of Elbert in Rhode Island. During the GOP convention, Trump asked the Russians to find Hillary's lost emails. If they'd found them and had given them to Trump, would that have been collusion? Collusion, unless I'm missing something, is not a defined crime. It's a concept. Conspiracy, however, like I said, that's a crime. Two or more people agree to do an illegal thing, and then one of them takes a substantial step in the furtherance of doing the illegal idea. At which point, everybody is then guilty of conspiracy, whatever the conspiracy is. The thing they want to do does not have to be fully accomplished. Only a substantial step need be taken.
And that's up to judges and juries what constitutes substantial. But anyway, Anastasia Vashukovich is still sitting in jail in Thailand, having been busted for charge of, well, basically prostitution. And the story sounds so wacky, you would never believe it in a million years if it wasn't backed up by things like photographic evidence. She said she and several other hookers had close contact with, among other people, Oleg Deripaska, an aluminum magnate, interestingly, in Russia, and that she has somewhere between 14 and 16 hours of recordings of these aforementioned Russians talking about meddling in the American election, which, of course, we know didn't happen, except for when it did. Deripaska, in turn, is close to sweet, dear, cuddly, wouldn't hurt a flea or poison it with polonium, big bad Vladdy Daddy Putin. And Deripaska is also has also been close to Paul Manafort. They're not such good friends right now. Anastasia Vashukovich, however, isn't giving up any information yet. She says, "If America gives me protection, I will tell everything I know. I'm afraid to go back to Russia. Some strange things can happen, things like, you know, polonium in your tea and whatnot." She and nine other people were arrested in the community is called Pattaya. It's a city about 70 miles south of Bangkok. It has a sexy time scene, I guess you could say. And she's trying to get anybody to help her get out of Thailand and away from Russia. The New York Times describes it thusly: Ms. Vashukovich, wearing a bright green T-shirt with the word detainee in Thai, is a long way from the days she spent sailing on a yacht with Mr. Deripaska and his friends, including Sergei Prikhodko, a deputy prime minister. She says she was working for a modeling agency when she and several other models were sent to spend time on Mr. Deripaska's yacht. She later posted photographs and videos on social media showing Mr. Deripaska and Mr. Prikhodko together on the yacht. And Paul Manafort is into Mr. Deripaska for millions and millions of dollars during the presidential campaign back in 2016, according to evidence so far developed. Paul Manafort offered to provide private briefings on the campaign to Oleg Deripaska. Then there's Alexei Navalny, who is sort of the catalyst for all of this. He said that Mr. Prikhodko, Deputy Minister Prikhodko, was invited on the yacht trip on Oleg Deripaska's yacht for the purpose of bribing him. This video was by Alexei Navalny, who has been forbidden from running for president against democracy-loving Putin. You can hear Mr. Prikhodko talking about Russian-American relations. Now, the video itself has about 6.4 million views on YouTube, and the Russians are doing everything they can to try to stop it from being seen. Asked about the whole thing, a spokesperson for Oleg Deripaska says,
is hot story that appears far from being the truth.
Ms. Vashukovich, meanwhile, says that in the recording she has, they were discussing elections. Deripaska had a plan about elections. She said some of the conversations were with three people who spoke English fluently and whom she thought were Americans. Is this real? Is it fake? Who knows? She claims to have been asked to sign a document stating that that she believed she would be safe in Russia, but she has refused. She's being kept in a crowded cell with more than 100 women and three toilets. Meanwhile, Mr. Krylov, also in custody, said, "I think the press makes us a little bit safer because if they killed us in the prison, everyone would know." Sort of astonishes me the way that some people can so blithely dismiss matters of life and death. For why? Because they're still angry at Hillary Clinton? I don't know. I can't for the life of me fathom it. But there it is. That's not all we have in the way of morons by any stretch of the imagination. It's just sort of hard to wander away from this particular story or set of stories. But it will be awfully damned interesting to see how it plays out, and how the usual suspects who scream fake news deal with this. Then there's something else that isn't fake news. ProPublica, which is in the actual news business, has just published a story noting that the company, you know, that he says he divested himself of, the Trump Organization, has ordered, and this is the arcana of golf, tee boxes are marked with tee markers. You know, there's, and depending on one's proficiency, there's the pros, the men's, the women's, the ordinaries, you know, whatever. And that the Trump Organization has ordered up a bunch of tee markers with the seal of the President of the United States on it. This is arguably illegal. Really? The Trump administration and the Trump Organization are doing something illegal? Color me surprised. But no, it's real. It's only in the last few weeks, brand new tee markers for Trump golf courses that are that feature the seal of the President of the United States. ProPublica notes that under federal law, the seal's use is permitted only for official government business, and misuse can be a crime. Eagle Sign and Design. They have offices in New Albany, Indiana, and Louisville, Kentucky. they have received an order to manufacture dozens of round 12-inch replicas of the presidential seal to be placed next to the tee boxes at Trump golf course holes. Joseph E. Bates, who owns Eagle Sign, said, "We made the design and the client confirmed the design." Wouldn't say who the client was. Doesn't take a lot of guessing. This is apparently a go-to company for the Trump Organization for such sign making. Then there's 18 U.S. Code Section 713. Use of likenesses of the Great Seal of the United States, the seals of the President and Vice President, the seal of the United States Senate, United States House of Representatives, and the seal of the United States Congress. Whoever knowingly displays any printed or other likeness of the Great Seal of the United States, or the seals of the President or the Vice President of the United States, or the seal of the United States Senate, or the seal of the United States House of Representatives, or the seal of the United States Congress, or any facsimile thereof, in or in connection with any advertisement, poster, circular, book, pamphlet, or other publication, public meeting, play, motion picture, telecast, or other production, or on any building, monument, or stationery. It doesn't say golf courses now, does it? For the purpose of conveying, or in a manner reasonably calculated to convey, a false impression of sponsorship or approval by the government of the United States or by any department, agency, or instrumentality thereof, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 6 months or both. That's Section A. Now, how can you get away with it? That's what matters. A violation of the provisions of this section may be enjoined at the suit of the Attorney General in the case of the Great Seal of the United States and the seals of the President and the Vice President upon complaint by any authorized representative of any department or agency of the United States. In the case of the Seal of the United States, Senate upon complaint by the yada 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 yada. Well, it says enjoined. Oh, okay, I understand. A violation of the provisions may be enjoined. That means the Attorney General can sue to stop it. I don't think that means necessarily the Attorney General has to be the only one. Whoever, except as directed by the United States Congress or the Secretary of the Senate or the Clerk of the House of Representatives, acting jointly on its behalf, knowingly uses, manufactures, reproduces, sells, or purchases for resale either separately or appended to any article manufactured or sold in blah, 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 shall be fined or imprisoned. Then there's the part about the presidential seal. Whoever, except as authorized under regulations promulgated by the president and published by the Federal Register. So there's an and there. So even if Trump says, no, I want presidential seals at all my golf courses, beautiful presidential seals, they're going to be great, they're going to be beautiful, believe me. Even if he does that, it doesn't matter because it and published in the Federal Register. Knowingly manufactures, reproduces, sells, or purchases for resale either separately or appended to any article manufactured or sold. Any likeness of the seals of the President or Vice President or any substantial part thereof except for manufacture or sale of the article for the official use of the government of the United States, which those golf courses aren't, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 6 months or both. So the question is, who ordered them, Uday or Kusay? But it appears to be a misuse of government authority. The Department of Justice, upon inquiry from ProPublica, said, they declined to comment. They didn't say anything. The White House didn't say anything. The Trump Organization didn't say anything. And one wonders if a phone call has gone from, say, D.C. to New York. Eric, you goddamn doofus. I always thought you were the stupid one. But it's illegal. And you know, our country has a fascination with such, and may other countries do too, I suppose, with such things. It goes back to the secret society fascination of our government with
signs, symbols, secret handshakes, lodge high signs and the like. Millard Fillmore first sketched out the Great Seal of the President in 1850. Interestingly, this is at the same time that a secret society frenzy is sweeping through college campuses. My own fraternity was founded on May the 1st, 1848 in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, and they have secret passwords and words you can only say at a whisper, and handshakes, and how you sit, and gestures, and what we would today recognize as gang signs. But since it was well-to-do white boys at college, we didn't consider them gangs. But they had secret rituals, and it's all part of a piece. And just like you can't, my fraternity has rules about where you can put the Greek letters. For instance, Sigma Chi, you can walk around with Sigma Chi on your shirt, no big deal. Not my fraternity, no sir. You can't just put those Greek letters anywhere, because they're special Greek letters. So they can be on your ring, they can be on your tombstone, they can be on the front of the house. They can't be on your shirt or across the ass of your gym shorts. Informally, it is accepted to get it tattooed on your ankle, starting with around the First World War, or maybe the Spanish-American War, in lieu of things like dog tags. And so that all happens 1848, 1850, around in there. And so we have laws to protect the Great Seal of the United States, just because, among other things, you don't want, presidential seal condoms. Then again, maybe you do. It would help prevent presidential tertiary syphilis now, wouldn't it? You don't want presidential seal branded chicken flavored glop for starving peasants, as the DPRK described Campbell's chicken noodle soup the other day. It's protecting your brand. On the other hand, if you're one of those scions of the family of the Jamaica Queen's Jubilation Tea Corn Pone, well, everything's out there to make a buck for you, including the seal of the presidency of the United States of America. Bill in Allentown with a question. Seal of the U.S. When is this knuckle-walking House of Representatives going to get off their asses and impeach this bastard? Well, the short answer, Bill, is they're not, and you can't make them, and we can't make them. The only thing we can do is get the hell rid of them by standing together and putting our differences aside and electing people with D's behind their names who will actually do their jobs, because there's no hope. There is no hope of somebody with an R behind their name doing their job, but there is some hope, even if it's slim, that somebody with a D behind their name will do their job. So you got, again, here we go again. You got to get the House to get the impeachment, but then you got to get 2/3 of the Senate to get the conviction. So it's two-pronged. Me, I expect, I could be wrong. I expect Mueller's investigation, remember, we've noted this before, because he's a 71-year-old toddler, people around him say, "Oh, no, Mr. President, it's okay. Mueller will be done by Labor Day." Labor Day comes and goes. "Well, he'll be done by Halloween." "Oh, Halloween comes and goes."
Well, no, Mr. President. Really, stop kicking things. He'll be done by Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, we gather to get... Nope, still going. Christmas, New Year's, Martin Luther King Day, President's Day. Still going on. And I will not be in the least bothered, I suppose, if it is still going on come November. Hopefully that will provide the impetus for people to get rid of these Republican majorities. And there was another development in that. I'm one of the very rare people who does this sort of thing, who will tell you when he is wrong. And a good while back, I was wrong when I said that you know, maybe there was a fighting chance at taking back the House, but almost no chance whatsoever of taking the Senate. I revised my estimation when I saw how the Alabama primary turned out back in August of last year, and when people like Jeff Flake and Bob Corker said, "Nah, not going to run again. I've had enough." Opening up seats in Arizona, Alabama, and Tennessee. That, coupled with, say, the problems that Dean Heller has had in Nevada, the fact that things look far from lead pipe cinch certain in Texas for Ted Cruz, things could happen. Things could happen. And now, one more development. Effective, I believe, April Fool's Day, Senator Thad Cochran of Mississippi has decided to knock off. Yep. April Fool's Day of 2018, Senator Thad Cochran, citing ongoing problems with his health, which probably means he is not long for this world, is gone, resigning, not running, nothing, quitting. He said, "My hope is by making this announcement now, a smooth transition can be ensured. I regret my health has become an ongoing challenge. I intend to fulfill my responsibilities and commitments to the people of Mississippi." Well, fine time to start, because you never have before, Thad. "And the Senate, through the completion of the 2018 appropriation cycle, after which I'll formally retire from the U.S. Senate. It's been a great honor to serve the people of Mississippi and our country. I've done my best to make my decisions in the best interest of our nation," bullshit, "and my beloved state," horseshit too. "My top concern has always been my white constituents in Mississippi." Did I say that part out loud? "My constituents in Mississippi. My hope is by making this announcement now, smooth transition can be ensured so white voices will continue, their voice will continue to be heard in Washington, D.C. My efforts and those of my staff to assist them will continue and transfer to my successor, assuming they's white." No, I didn't. What? I didn't mean to add that part. No, sir. Mm-mm. Well, that makes things interesting some more. Very much so. Thad Cochran's 80 years old, and he's been sick for a while. And I guess somebody gave him the news that it's not going to get any better. But see, here's the thing. He's the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. That would be your purse strings. And so he says he's going to try to stick around through the end of the appropriations process. Maybe I can live to see the end of that nefarious Kenyan Obamacare. But the governor of Mississippi
will have to appoint someone to fill his remaining term. And this, in turn, kind of makes you look a little bit east to Alabama and say, huh, I remember when something similar happened over there. And you wonder if there's a viable Democratic candidate in Mississippi that people can rally around. Yes, I know Doug Jones is insufficiently ideologically pure, and goodness me, mercy sakes alive. But you have, it's just a matter of adding D's when it comes to finding out who. You add all the D's and you add all the R's, and whoever's got more of them gets to have the majority in the Senate and decide how things get done. So is there a chance? Does Mississippi have a pedophile Republican they can run for that seat, please? Well, as a matter of fact, there is Chris McDaniel. Remember Chris McDaniel? He ran. For Senate, he's a Republican who ran for Senate in a primary and got beat a couple of years ago, but came mighty close. But apparently, this means that Mississippi will have two, count them, two Senate seats open for election this year. Chris McDaniel said, while it is certain that Mississippi will have two U.S. Senate races this year, I'm currently focused on my campaign against Roger Wicker. But all options remain on the table as we determine the best way to ensure that Mississippi elects conservatives to the new United States Senate. If there was some way humanly possible to snag one, if not both, of those two seats, again, things could get interesting really, really quickly. And that is true. Steve says, I get your point about what I said. Not sure I agree, but I get it regarding the fact that there's a big difference between House representing action versus Bob Mueller action. However, here's something I'm thinking we can both 10,000% agree on. The weirdness went to 11 today. Oh, yes, it did. It's Monday. It kind of... Kind of felt like it had to. So that's just a taste. That's just a taste of what we have for this Moran Monday. By no means anywhere near all of it. Well, I was hoping we could knock out some of the fundraising goal for the evening, but that's apparently a bust. So far it is, at least. We started out with $225 to raise. We still have $225 to raise. Be magnificent if we could knock that down some. So, the question is, can we? And, I, honest to God, don't know. It remains to be seen. If there was some way for me to just independently finance all this, I'd never mention contributions, not even once. But No, unfortunately, I'm not the scion of any. Mm-mm. So we'll take a break. See what's on your mind if you want to jump into the program. 304-574-8178 is the number. Toll free, assuming it works. We had some trouble the other night during the Malloy program. 844-843-4676. That's the toll free number. 844-THE-HORN. And, of course, from anywhere on planet Earth that doesn't have it firewalled off or something, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn on Skype gets you right through and into the program. So let's see how things shake out. It's More in Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob. We'll be back.
Cry! Cry! Cry!
It's bad, you know, when you have those guns. Try to slip out on me. I had one like that. But I heard her feet when they hit that bridge. That's what I told her.
John! Hey!
10 minutes past the hour, going down south with R.L. Burnside all the way back to 1996. And, well, you know what? I neglected to mention something. You know, we'd have this program fully funded if you guys would order the bullshit nutritional supplements a little more frequently, or, you know, at all. Because, you know, people like Alex Jones are making a damn fortune on bullshit nutritional supplements. Millions of dollars. Not any pissant $200 a day. Millions of dollars. And that's why I'm proud to tell you today about Grasselant Green Onions. Grasselant Green Onions from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, is a proprietary blend of organic, non-GMO, cruelty-free, free-range, cage-free, vegan green onions grown in the toxic soil of a mountaintop removal site that is guaranteed by absolutely no one to put a tonic just a tonic spring in your step. Yeah, that's right. Grasselant Green Onions from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter is the only Grasselant Green Onion product on the entire bullshit nutritional supplement market, and you can only get them here at the Horn. A 3-month supply, if you order it now, will include a little bundle of meaningless test strips so that you can look at them and wonder which part you put where in order to find out that, in fact, this is just another bullshit nutritional supplement for sale on the radio. Grasselant Green Onions, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. For a 3-month supply, will cost you only $225 even, plus $200 shipping and handling. Grasselant Green Onions, prepared by hand. And after the hands have prepared the Grasselant Green Onions, you may rest assured that the hands and the bodies attached to them are not allowed back indoors for several days until the pungency of the Grasselant Green Onions has gone away. They stink. Grasselant Green Onions from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Accept no substitutes. No salesman will call. We take out the middleman and don't pass the savings on to you. Your mileage may vary. This side up. Use no hooks. Post no bills. COB. FOD. FUK. Grasselant Green Onions, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Well, of course there's no guarantee, Laborman. Laborman says, what, no guarantee to give me a boner? No, you're going to have to get those on your own, Laborman. But doggone it, if you believe Grasselant Green Onions will help you get them, I'll bet they will. Yes, indeed. Grasselant Green Onions. So in lieu of anybody ordering up some Grasselant Green Onions for $225 for a 3-month supply plus $200 shipping and handling, well, Brother Deacon Asa has offered to match the first 25 bucks that comes into the program so that we can get off the fundraising schneid and not have ourselves a $425 fundraising hole come tomorrow. So if anybody out there would like to double their money, Brother Deacon Asa is willing to do that for you to the tune of 25 bucks. So thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you very much indeed. Where to next? Well, yes, Morans everywhere. So many Morans, so little time. But let me remind you of one thing. Especially if you decide to go over and read any Caitlin Johnstone articles or whatnot, you know.
You're being fed what Hitler fed to his people in before World War I.
Thank you, Delegate Cooper. The gift that keeps on giving. Mm-hmm. How I love that. No, no, I am not. Bill's keeping track. Sounds like you're recycling orgiastic onions with your grasslant green onions. No, no, no. Orgiastic onions are you know, big old onions from under the ground. These are the tender, thin-bladed, tiny shoots that first come up in the spring garden. That's your grasslant green onions. We would never do anything like recycling undersold bullshit nutritional supplements because, you know, well, damn it. They're all sold out? No. Real radio programs with bullshit nutritional supplements don't repurpose or anything like that. No, absolutely not. All right. Well, thank you, Labor Man. Brother Deacon Ace's challenge has been met, and Labor Man is pushing it forward. Okay, I got that 25, and I'll kick up an add-on challenge. I'll match the next 25 that comes in. So if somebody else has another 25 to kick in, Labor Man will double it, and we'll actually have knocked down $100 of the $225 we need to raise tonight. That's exciting. So wonderful. So, you know, don't leave Labor Man out there flapping in the breeze, for God's sakes. Okay? All right, so it's More End Monday, right? We should play the Calliope music. No. Just a quick reminder. Next time that you think that there's nothing more to country music than songs about crying in your beer and mama and trains and, you know, whatever, or that it's just a bunch of ignorant rednecks out there who probably voted for Trump, think again. For some reason or another, there are some assholes and idiots at the Country Music Association Foundation. Okay? There are. No doubt about it. Oh, stand by. Okay, all better now. There are apparently some right-wing assholes at the Country Music Association Foundation. It's a charity. And somebody there, and apparently several somebodies, thought it would be a good idea to put pastor, brother, governor, former presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, Mike Huckstaby, on their board. And for a hot minute they did. And then they didn't. The CEO of the Country Music Association Foundation is Sarah Trahern. The CMA Foundation Director of Community Outreach is Tiffany Kearns. They got a letter once the news started going around that they thought it'd be a good idea to put pastor, brother, minister, former governor, former presidential candidate, diabetes cure, snake oil salesman, Mike Huckstaby on the board. A fellow by the name of Jason Owen, who runs Sandbox Entertainment and Monument Records, fired off a letter to the aforementioned Trahern and Kearns. It read as follows. Sarah and Tiffany, it is with a heavy heart that I must let you know moving forward, Sandbox and Monument will no longer support the CMA Foundation in any way. This includes everyone we represent collectively. Considering the heartbreaking news shared today regarding Mike Huckabee, appointee elected to the CMA Foundation. Further, I have a child and two on the way. This man, further, we find it hard to support the organization as a whole as a result. As you may know, I have a child and two on the way. This man has made it clear that my family is not welcome in his America. And see, Jason Owen is gay. And the CMA has opened their arms to him, making him feel welcome and relevant. Huckabee speaks of the sort of things that would suggest my family is morally beneath his and uses language that has a profoundly negative impact upon young people all across this country, not to mention how harmful and damaging his deep involvement with the NRA is. What a shameful choice. I will not participate in any organization that elevates people like this to positions that amplify their sick voices. This was a detrimentally poor choice by the CMA and its leaders. I only wish the best for you, and I know how hard you work for the foundation, but a grossly offensive decision like this only makes your job harder and diminishes the foundation's purpose. The CMA Foundation is the philanthropic arm of the Country Music Association. Among other things, they support music education programs all around the U.S. As I mentioned, Sandbox Entertainment Management and Monument Records. Well, what do we mean when we say Sandbox Entertainment? When he says, parentheses, this includes everyone we represent collectively, that would include Faith Hill, Little Big Town, Casey Musgraves, Midland, Walker Hayes, Caitlin Smith. Yeah. And so it was that Mike Huckabee was almost, for a hot minute, he was on the Country Music Association Foundation board. And then Huckabee kind of had to step down so he wouldn't be the complete ruination of an organization that actually tries to do some good in the world. You know, unlike Mike Huckabee. He fired up his blog and published a letter on his official site. He titled the post, "Hate Wins." It appears that I will make history as having the shortest tenure in the history of the CMA Foundation Board. I genuinely regret that some in the industry were so outraged by my appointment that they bullied the CMA and the Foundation with economic threats and vowed to withhold support for the programs for students if I remained. Bullies succeeded in making it untenable to have someone like me involved. I would imagine, however, that many of the people who buy tickets and music are not that unlike me. I hereby tender my resignation effective immediately. I hope this will end the unnecessary distraction and deterrent to the core mission of the foundation, which is to help kids acquire musical instruments and have an opportunity to participate in music programs as students. Jesus, Mike, you little fucking snowflake. Get off the cross. We need the wood. People like me. Oh my God. He is a delicate one, isn't he? Hate wins. No, Hate won when he was appointed to the goddamn board. He claims that I have no expectation my resignation will change the irrational vitriol directed toward you or me for my religious political views that necessitated my abrupt departure. His religious and political views include, as Mr. Owens noted, treating people that he deems to be sinners or insufficiently Republican or insufficiently straight or cisgendered. Like trash. I want you to know that what you would never know by reading intolerant and vicious statements on the internet about who I am or what led me to want to be part of your efforts to empower kids with the gift of music. So please bear with me.
Look, Mike, it's pretty easy. All you have to do is stop despising people. Stop hating people. Stop trashing people for how they love and who they love. Stop supporting vicious bigots like Sister Clerk Kim Davis, for whose book you wrote a fucking foreword, you penny-ante grifter. Jesus. These right-wing asses can leap up on the cross almost better than anybody out there. Because he is a bigot, because he is a merchant of hate, because he supports a domestic terror organization like the NRA, he got run off by the free market. That's the thing, by the free market. Because Mr. Owens's money meant more than any money Huckstery could bring in. Isn't that just free market economics? Isn't that the economic theory to which Huckstery subscribes? Nonetheless, he got a call from a booker over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and like I said, he could shinny up a cross if it was slathered in goose grease and just nail himself right in. Oh, come on, really? We'll try this again. Oh, we can't miss out on Mike. No. Sometimes I despise Firefox. Well, we'll have it back in a second. There we go. Tell us all about it, Mike.
Today, the new direction of the left is, in the name of tolerance, be intolerant. In the name of love, hate people. And in the name of diversity, demand conformity. Because that's where we are. And it's not enough to say, I disagree, and I wish this person, you know, would change his mind. Mm-hmm. Today, it's let's put him out of business. Let's close his store. Let's not allow him to continue to operate a business. Let's damage him professionally. Let's hurt his brand. I mean, it's all about destroying the other side rather than disagreeing with the other side.
No, it's not. Nobody wants to destroy Mike Huckstery. But there is a moral duty that attaches, for at least some people, you know, people with morals, unlike Mike Huckstery, there's a moral duty that attaches to opposing the hate in which he traffics. See, this is a classic piece of diversion and deflection. Well, they're not being tolerant because they won't tolerate my hatefulness. Bit of a conundrum, I suppose, for him. All he has to do is live and let live. But he can't do that. All some bigoted baker has to do is live and let live. And participate in the glorious, sacred, holy free market. But it's too much. It's just too much. And poor Mike up there on the cross hollering about how his brand's been damaged.
That's not the kind of America where the First Amendment reigns and people are free to speak, to associate, to...
Yeah, shut up, Mike. You don't know anything about the First freaking Amendment. The government did not suppress your speech, pathetic moron. The country music... Association Foundation is not the government. There's also freedom of association, which the government also cannot quash.
And they deemed that they would rather associate with the likes of Faith Hill and Little Big Town than associate with you, a greasy, slimy, religion industry, gospel sharp, a hustler of hate, and a purveyor of bigotry. Bronze Age bigotry. They decided they'd rather be associated with decent people than a guy who hustles a snake oil diabetes cure. I don't see where it was such a big deal. In the name of love, hate people. In the name of diversity, demand conformity. Nobody's asking you to conform to anything, you idiot. Nobody's asking you to be gay. You're either gay or you're not gay. You know, born that way. Unless, of course, Mike, you're willing to tell us that you have to wake up every morning and decide to be straight. Because it's a choice. Nobody asked you to conform to anything. Rather, it's a matter of not wanting to be associated with a bigot. Here's how you can peel poor little Mike's pathetic attempt at reason like a grape. Under Mike Huckabee's theory, the NAACP should reach out to the Klan in a membership drive. Is there anybody out there that would... And yes, I just compared Mike Huckabee to the fucking Klan because it's easy. Because he supports, among other things, a president supported by the Klan. He stands with Klansmen and neo-Nazis and Klan sympathizers and Nazi sympathizers and skinheads and the rest of the sick little 30, 33, 35% of hardcore, hard-case, dead-ender Trumpansy maggots. Boom. Done. Not a big challenge, no. Steve with a note. Just another example of how old white Christian men are so persecuted these days. I think at least half of them would probably feel a lot better if they just had that little experience they've been fantasizing about for so long. Okay, first cowbell of the night goes to Arthur. Hey, Bob, does Mike Huckabee's blog post play a sad violin solo? The institution's mission to give children instruments. Straight instruments? Sad trombone? Yeah. Scott and Punky with a note. Huckabee's self-crucifixion efforts. It's always entertaining to observe it when he attempts that. It's especially fun to see the frustrated expression on his pudgy face when he can't figure out exactly how he'll manage to pound that last nail in. With the side of his head. Little short Tyrannosaurus Rex arms. Just quack, quack, quack. Yeah. Jesus. I couldn't let that one go. Not by a long shot. So, you know what? Good. Good for Jason Owen. Good for Jason Owen indeed. And good for the, well, hopefully there will be a little bit of a learning curve that the Country Music Association Foundation will climb now. It took from February 28th to March 1st for the resignation to take effect. That was pretty damn quick. And but then again, you know, he's hinting at economic action of his own. I would imagine many of the people who buy tickets and music are not that unlike me. Are you saying that? So you're saying that they're a bunch of bigots and, yeah. God damn, this letter. This letter just goes on and on and on. All of us have deep passions about our beliefs. I do about mine. But I hate no one. Bullshit. I wish upon no one the loss of life or livelihood because that person sees things differently from me. Well, that wasn't what you were putting out for public consumption when you showed up in Round County in the county seat there at Moorhead. Supporting Sister Clerk Kim Davis in her desire to keep two people from getting married after the Supreme Court of the United States said it was absolutely legal to do so. I hope the music and entertainment industry will become more tolerant and inclusive and recognize that a true love for kids having access to the arts is more important than a dislike for someone. Oh, shut up, Snowflake. That's the whole thing. The industry is becoming more tolerant and inclusive and diverse. And that does lead to more kids having access to the arts. But then again, he's a Republican, and he doesn't believe in access to the arts. He's a budget slasher. He's a fiscal conservative. And under the rule of those fiscal conservatives, there's hardly an art program, a music program, or a speech and drama program left in the damn country. Kids wanting to learn music shouldn't be the victims of adults who demand that only certain people can be in the room or be heard. No, they shouldn't. And the only person making that argument was you. What would you have done if the child of a gay couple got a guitar, or a trumpet, or a drum, or a violin? What would you have done if they played a recital in a school that had non-gendered bathrooms, Mike? Why, you'd have had a Jesus-up conniption hissy fit. That's what you'd have done, dick. Oops, sorry, that was gendered. Asshole. There, better. So you see how, right. More morons. Lots more morons. Hey, it turns out we know why it was that the Trump administration went after Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah. You know, I follow a web page with a lot of photographs from people who go there and love that place. I want to see it. I admit again to another case of geographic ignorance and geographic, perhaps, I don't know, is it bigotry? I hear Utah and I think of great goddamn big desert with some mountains in it that don't have any trees on them because it's a desert, but that gets snowed on from time to time, making for some apparently damn fine skiing. But I am apparently wrong. There are, by all appearances, exquisite places, exquisite natural places in Utah. And that's why the Obama administration tried to save them from the people who want to blast and poison their way to temporary wealth and leave everybody else behind. And that's what happened when Trump gutted, for all intents and purposes, destroyed these two national monuments that were set aside by the Obama administration in an act that was not entirely unheard of, but extremely rare. Well, now we know why. The New York Times, oh dear, the state-run media of empire, got hold of some documents. These documents were drafted a long time before Interior Secretary Ryan Shrinky Zinke started carrying on about wanting to shrink bears' ears in southeastern Utah. And it turned out that the Trump regime had already set its sights on reducing the boundaries of bears' ears. And guess why? Well, it came from the office of Senator Orrin Hatch, where an aide there, and I'll bet we know who one of those aides was at least, where an aide there went to the Department of Interior asking for the boundaries of bears' ears to be reduced. Why? Because by reducing those boundaries, they would open up the land to drilling and fracking. Oil and gas sites were within the boundaries, and by shrinking the boundaries, all known mineral conflicts would be resolved. Meanwhile, the Department of the Interior remains quiet on the issue. Now, you can go online and just look up bears' ears. Click images, you'll see some stunning photographs of places probably wildly unlike anywhere near where you live, unless you live there. And if you look at those photographs and try to imagine them gouged and dug and blasted and blown away and poisoned and hacked and drilled, you get an idea at what's at risk. Then at Grand Staircase Escalante, the Interior Department started creating estimates of the value of coal that could be mined in that national monument. And when the Gotham Gump cut Grand Staircase Escalante in half, it turned out that the part that he deprotected was the part with the coal in it. Grand Staircase Escalante has been a national treasure since the Clinton administration, 1996. Bears' ears, 20 years later, December 2016, created by Barack Obama. They are treasures. They are monuments. They are places of tremendous heritage value, both to indigenous people and to anyone who considers themselves interested and a part of preserving the last wild spaces in this country. Yeah. Quarter before the hour, again, ACE's challenge was met by Laborman. Laborman, meeting the challenge, offered another $25 for anybody else who would pony up $25, thereby creating $100 raised this evening. So far, nobody answering Laborman's challenge. It would be nice if someone would. It would be extremely helpful. It's how we keep this program on the air. There are always bills to be paid here. And now is no different from any other time. PayPal interfaces can be found both at headonradionetwork.com and headon.live. Let's run over and check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Ah, you know, it's a great day to be a West Virginian, isn't it?
Well, I don't know about that. Tell you the truth, the way the things have been going in the state and the way people are portrayed here, I'm not sure.
Well, I'm just trying to be a little ray of sunshine, Jim.
Oh, I know exactly what you're like to be. No, as far as these national monuments are concerned, you know damn well what has happened and what's going to happen to them. They're gone. Because the Trump administration wishes to destroy anything that was supported by Obama and other previous Democrats. They just seem to have this desire to eliminate them so that when they see what they are, they will no longer be offended and will be so pleased to see them gone. Very nihilistic, as far as I'm concerned. It really is.
Well, yeah, and let's not...
It really is. I mean, it's total nihilism. Exactly. That's what it is.
Well, let's... Let me ask you this.
Are they still standing?
What are they still there? Yeah, they haven't gotten to them yet because they're wrapped up in lawsuits.
I've received emails about that today, and I hope that something can happen to save them, but...
I mean, one of the reasons that I'm so fond of Patagonia's gear is the fact that they didn't waste any time at all. They may be a corporation, but they jumped out there and they sued the Trump administration post haste, trying to buy time and trying to protect these monuments.
Well, that's all you can do with these people where they are. But they are hell bent on destroying anything that would appear to have any type of connection with the previous administration. I think that's basically what they're trying to do deep down. They just have that feeling of inner hatred. But, you know, when you accuse...
Hold on, Jim. It's not just that. They see money. Everything they see has a dollar value on it, and it's a pitiful way to go through life, really.
Well, I was looking at the extrinsic situation more than the intrinsic thing. That's my point. I mean, sure, this place is totally anywhere else besides this place. And the fact that they were left alone would not diminish the influx of the amount of coal that they need and want to sell.
No, there's not even anybody out there that wants that coal. It is designed.
That's what I'm saying.
It's designed to be put on a train, and then put on a boat, and then shipped to China.
But it's not the intrinsic value, it's the extrinsic value. Well, it's my point.
Yeah,
that's where these people are. They are hateful, and they're mean-spirited. And when anyone tries to oppose them, as you were saying earlier, and use their own tactics against them, then they scream and yell as they are running like cockroaches on a kitchen floor where you turn on the light. And are angry because they have to do that. They can't take a dose of their own medicine.
Speaking of cockroaches, Jim, you know, I don't mention these things a lot, but there was a skit on Saturday Night Live this past Saturday night that was for the ages.
I understand.
Charles Barkley guest hosted and did a skit for Ned's Roach Away, because the only way to stop a bad roach is a good roach with a gun. For anybody, go find it, view it, not right now, but the concept of little roaches with semi-automatic or automatic assault weapons shooting other roaches as a way to end a roach problem. Well, it was, and the fact that it's Ned's Roach Away, NRA, that was brilliant too. And by God, they are a triggered gang of snowflakes over there at America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization, because they were up and pissing and moaning come Sunday morning. I thought Dana Lush was going to have her belt and shoelaces taken away. She was hollering bigotry and discrimination. Oh, it was terrible, terrible.
Oh, fuck her. You know, speaking of TV this weekend, last night I watched...
Not with yours, Jim, I wouldn't.
I watched the Oscars last night, and normally I don't do that because I haven't seen any of the films that are being, you know, are in contest. But there were several things that really allowed me to enjoy that program, at least I allowed myself. Number one of the presenters... just so well gowned and coiffed and turned around and just let it go. It was marvelous. Even though there's plenty of snow on her roof, there's a hell of a lot of fire in her chimney, and it was just wonderful to see her acting and behaving the way she did.
Wait, who? I never watch these things, and like you, for some reason, I hooked up the antenna to the TV and got a very poor signal from WOAY, and Agnes and I watched it together. Who did this thing? I missed it.
Well, I don't know, but you missed a good part, and another part was the fact that part of the presenting of the receptive audience and part of the leadership there took people over to a theater to thank the viewing audience for making their livelihood possible.
That part I saw, yes.
Which I thought was absolutely wonderful. And even though a couple films didn't get recognition that I hoped would, it still was not a bad experience at all, and it did not bother me at all to listen to it. And by the way, most of the transitional music they used was by Cole Porter.
Was it? I noticed there was a lot of classic Hollywood music there.
Well, it was by Cole Porter, sure was. And it was an enjoyable presentation for me to see. It really was. But Rita Moreno, that lady really still has it. And it made me feel so good to see her. You know, as a matter of fact, I've seen West Side Story 19,000 times probably. And even when I saw it the first time when I was like 15, her part, to me, it was my favorite part. I liked her better than I did Maria by Natalie Wood.
So what did you see yourself as, a shark or a jet, Jim?
Neither. Probably a jet. You know, when you're a jet from your first cigarette to your last dying day. Probably. And then I could feel with the Puerto Ricans too, you know, Lord, led by George Takiris. And, you know, I would think that the music of the production. And when I look back on that, it was just those people, the choreography was superb. But the Puerto Rican musical aspect definitely was more appealing. And, you know, that's when I was thinking of you, when Rita Moreno said, I like the Isle of Manhattan, put that in your pipe and spoke with that in. That's a word to that effect. It was just incredible. You know, you even played it one time on your program, I Like It Here in America, For Us All Free in America, Everything Free in America.
Yep.
It was very nice, very nice. The whole program was, and let's see. But going back to these people that you were talking about earlier, and I don't know a whole lot about country music or what's going on with it, but when you talk about these classes And I'm making a jump here. And please try to follow me. And look at the Trump base and the groups of right wing religion people and rednecks, people like that, you know what I'm saying? The best explanation how these groups really came to being, I found in the pages of Rainbow Pie with Joe Bajan.
It's a magnificent book.
Nobody explains their formation to me better than he, and also Waltzing as a Doomsday Ball.
And Deer Hunting with Jesus.
Right. I mean, so he really has, he just laid it right out there. And he just, being a member of it, being from of it, he understood it and portrayed it quite well in his writing.
Well, nobody is harder on this area and this region than I am. But even I get my back up a little bit when I hear progressives, liberals, whatever, from other parts of the country, just uniformly dismissing Appalachia as a whole.
Well, Bob, look who they put on the media to represent this state. The worst ones they could possibly find.
Well, sure, because there's no interest in coming to, since, say, November 8th, 2017, there's no interest in coming to Appalachia to talk to me or you or any of the other, I won't say countless, but lots of progressive people looking to a hopeful progressive future for Appalachia. That doesn't fit with their narrative, okay?
I'm sorry?
That doesn't fit with their narrative. They want to come here and they want to talk to somebody with two separate tooth stubs in their mouth.
I understand that.
Who will talk about Trump's going to make America great again because of that, the war on coal that one in our White House was done waging.
Well, somehow, whose fault is that? That's the fault of the media. In this country,
yes, it is. It is absolutely their fault. It's their fault at the New York Times. It's their fault at every broadcast outlet. I give credit to MSNBC and Chris Hayes in particular for at least wanting to find out that there is a progressive side to this state, and I will be forever grateful for that. But there are a lot of outlets that find value in doing something that the for-profit media have been doing for 150 years, Jim, 150 years, and that is sending people to Appalachia so that they can point out Appalachia to the rest of the country and the rest of the country can look and laugh.
Well, don't you remember those things they had on a couple of years ago where they showed how Appalachians have fun and jump into rivers that are toxic, and all these.
Oh, you mean that reality show where the kid wound up dying?
Path. Yeah, it was just absolutely horrible. And one of them finally got killed in a four-wheel accident.
No, he suffocated himself in a mud bog in his four-wheel drive.
Yeah, and then, of course, it had to point out that MTV had to pay for his funeral. And then, of course, when you have a member of the House of Delegates, and you certainly expanded on this last week, talk about Hitler in World War One and being that goddamn ignorant. I mean, as a member of the for-profit media, I mean, that's their bread and butter, is to pick up on stuff like that. That's exactly what they do. That's what they're paid to do. I mean, that's how they make their money. I mean, if they get up and try to present a more accurate picture of Appalachia than it has been, and maybe there's not enough interest in that, I don't know. But I think that there are certain elements in this state who support that, and they want the rest of the country to continue to view this part.
That there are people in this state who benefit from those stereotypes? Goddamn
exactly.
Right. As long as Central Appalachia, Jim, remains a place of derision, remains a place where you laugh at the people who live there, it's okay to keep killing us.
Yeah, and then, of course, if there's nobody here, then they can take what's left. And if there's not even a whole lot left, which I don't think there really is in many cases. But, and of course, when people who are growing up here see this, you see a mass exodus as quickly as a lot of these young people achieve their majority. They're out of here. They're going to North Carolina. They're going to other parts of the country because, number one, they don't have to view the absolute bleakness and lack of hope that seems to be prevailing here. And
Jim, they leave.
It's all a self-destructive process.
Jim, they leave and then they pine for home.
Well, I haven't known too many of those.
Oh, no, they do. They leave and then they pine for home. They can't come home because there's nothing here for them. But they pine. And they miss the hills and the hollers. Or they do what J.D. Vance did and, ride some external factors to some success and then turn around and write a book from, sitting out on the left coast talking about how hillbillies have to pick themselves up by their own bootstraps. This shit drives me crazy.
Well, I'm sure it probably does. Absolutely. But like I say, they may pine for home, but they found that the grass is greener on the other side. And the reason it is because I think, number one, it is true. And number two, there are elements in the state power system that want to keep it like that. Because it behooves their economic interest.
When you look at the amount of wealth that has been taken out of this state and this region, this whole place should be paved with streets of gold, Jim.
Well, it's not.
It's not by a long shot.
It's all minus, no plus. That's the way it is. When I first came here, my first contact was that type of feeling that this area had been dumped on by all these big industrial conglomerates who took and took and took, and when they left nothing but a moonscape and impoverished people who had been misused, abused, and people whose mineral rights of their land they had taken. And not only did they take what was on top of the ground, them, but also what was beneath the surface. That's what they've done. That's what's happened here. At least that's been my impression. And I'm not a native West Virginian. I'm not. But that's my impression of it and my reaction to it. It really is.
Well, no,
I don't think you can argue with that.
No, there's not a lot of argument there, Jim. The question is, how do we go about changing things so that there can be a future here?
Well, I think one of the things that's happening here very recently are the reactions of our state's teachers and state civil service, particularly our teachers, and their efforts to, number one, obtain well-deserved raises of much in excess of 5%, and also to maintain the integrity of their PEI or their insurance program. Now, to me, that's one of the biggest things that I've seen happen here. And these people just didn't come for a weekend. Oh, no. They've been here, and as far as I know, I think schools are going to be closed tomorrow, too.
Yeah, and there were so many people, I don't know if you're aware of this, there were so many people trying to get into the Capitol today.
And we're making headline news all over the country.
So many people tried to get into the West Virginia State Capitol today between 1 and 3 p.m. that the state fire marshal banned further entrance.
I mean,
because
really,
it was full to busting.
It's wonderful to see this reaction, and I have several good friends who are teachers, and my best friend is a teacher substitute, and she is. kept me abreast of this, and she just hopes that it will continue and continue. If they have to close every school in this state down until the end of the year, until they get what they want, then that will be one of the best things I've seen happen in 20 years. So that's one of the big, you asked for a ray of hope, that's one of them.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one. And believe you me, it's caused a lot of these ignorant assholes who are trying to prevent this from getting what they need to realize, oh, well, you know, it looks like they ain't going away. And they're not. And I hope they don't.
And it's clear that that everything is being stymied by two Republican white men in the West Virginia State Senate.
Is that the one he talked about, Hitler?
No. That's not no. The House of Delegates voted like 98-1 or something. It was ridiculous to approve the teacher pay raise,
mm-hmm.
The majority leader and the president of the West Virginia State Senate, two Republicans, are keeping anything from happening there.
Well, they need to go.
Well, they need to go, and you know, you can get all Oliver Cromwell on their ass and for God's sakes go and all of that, but the fact of the matter is there's no way to make them go until November.
Well, you know, if somebody went in there and blew their goddamn brains out, it would not bother me one bit. I said it, you didn't.
I know, but it's my ass that'll get burnt for it.
No, I don't think so. I think there are a lot of people who feel that way.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's not going to happen either, and shouldn't.
Well,
it's been an amazing expression of determination, but it also has to work, because what these Republicans are hoping is that they can wait the teachers out, that if the students lose like an entire semester of their education, that the anger, the white hot, and I do mean white hot anger of the parents will be sufficient to dilute any frustration with the fact that this is entirely a creature of Republican creation.
I don't see it that way. I see it that white hot anger you're talking about could be directed against the people who are causing it, and I don't mean the teachers.
No, the Republicans, but
the people who are causing the teachers not to go back are the Republicans.
Right.
And maybe that anger could be directed at them. I would hope so. That's what I hear from people around here.
Well, you can look around. I have been for the last few days, and there's always some godforsaken Republican who's out there trying to blame the teachers.
Are you surprised? Of course it's going to be that. Because they miss number one, they don't give a shit. Those people are the ones who don't give a shit that the kid's learning anything. They just want the kid out of the house. They miss the babysitting function of the teacher. Oh, God, he's going to be home 8 hours. Then what are we going to do with him?
And again, I go back to what I previously said. Jim, compare how well-spoken the Parkland kids are from Florida. How many West Virginia high school students do you think that could come off that well?
Bob, it's a whole different social scale. Parkland in Florida, these people are from areas in which what's the median salary of that county?
Oh, $126,000, I think was what
they
found out.
Naturally, you're going to have kids like that who are more sophisticated, more urbane, and well-educated, and who, when they leave school, they return to an environment that is conducive to that. Here, that's not the case. It's the exception, if you have, not the rule. There, it's the rule, not the exception. Period. It's just a whole different economic structure. And you've got Florida. Florida is an extremely cosmopolitan state. Everybody wants to live there. Everybody wants to retire there. And they have such a tremendous progressive spirit, at least economically and socially. Now, politically, no. I don't know how the people who are
in
Tallahassee get there.
Okay, well, I mentioned a minute ago that the Republicans are not sitting silently in all of this. Here's one tweet. West Virginia teacher strike sends a chilling message to businesses that West Virginia is not open for business. WV work stoppage equal loss of new WV jobs. It's bad enough WV is 50th in EDU nationally because of unions and bad teachers. Privatize WV public schools, save taxpayer dollars, equal raise for all.
Well, that's a chance you're going to have to take if you're going to have any progress. If it happens that way, it happens that way. But it's better than sitting on your ass and let these people shit on you day in and day out, week in, week out, month in and month out. Any type of solution or the key to that solution is not going to be painless. It's going to take pain, hurt, and sorrow for anything like that to change. You know it, and I know it. And you'll have to admit that that's true. I'm not trying to tell you what to say on your own program, but you know what, you know in your heart what I say is true.
Totally and absolutely. No, I know that there has to be radical change in this state. And frankly,
and they don't come painlessly.
No.
They don't. I mean, you know, as Khrushchev once said, there are certain mistakes corrected only by the grave.
Well, you know,
that's just it.
Some of us are doing what we can to correct it.
Well, I think the teachers are definitely on the right road.
They are. If they then, how can I put this? They need to understand who the enemy is.
If their own union doesn't turn around and stab them in the back like they tried to do last week,
they need to understand who the enemy is.
They know who the enemy is, too. Let me tell you, they do. They know exactly who the enemy is.
I hope they do.
Well, I think they do. I have contact with people who are teachers who are participating in this strike, and I've talked to them, you know, and I hate that, you know. I have talked to them, and they do. They know that the enemy is not them per se, it is the Republicans and these two idiots in the Senate who are trying to fight what I hope will be a losing battle. And I just wish these two men would just go away, just vanish. I don't care where. And that idiot who was talking about Hitler in World War I, go, just leave, vanish. I don't care how it's done. You know, I can see how people got to the point, for example, in other countries where revolutions have occurred, and I'm talking about bloody revolutions, that was the only way they could do it.
Well, look, that's straight out of John Kennedy, Jim. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And
you know,
I don't remember John Kennedy being any sort of bomb-throwing anarchist.
No. But what he said was true. I mean, you know, these things are like, they're like volcanoes that are, you know, not volcanoes, but they're like pustule on the human body. If you allow those things to remain and don't take care of these things, then they're going to take care of something that you don't really want to have happen.
Well, it's like that clown's tweet that I just shared. The fact of the matter is, business doesn't want to come to West Virginia because our education system was a goddamn wreck to start with. people don't want to move to a state where their kids can't get a decent decent public school education. One.
Exactly.
Two, they don't want to come to a place where the water's fucking poison, which it is.
Well, that goes without saying.
Three, they don't want to come to somewhere where they're going to be breathing poison in their air 24 hours a day, seven days a week.
Here again, this is well known.
And so something that I've said for a very long time remains as true as the coming sunrise.
Well, yeah.
The coal industry is entirely, wholly, completely, totally incompatible with any other economic development, any other economic diversification. It even impinges and impedes upon the tourism industry, the much vaunted tourism industry,
mm-hmm.
that still hasn't figured out a way to pay the people who run it a living wage.
No. And that's just the fate of.
And I mean, I wonder. I'm no economist, but it would be interesting to me to see how people in other tourism-driven communities. How do they, you know, how does tourism work as a 12-month economic force?
They don't have coal, Bob. They don't have the things that you just talked about. The air is better. The water is better. It ain't here. This is, for lack of no disrespect intended, but these other places view this, say, is the asshole of the country. Because of what you just said.
It's a shithole.
Yeah, that's how they think about it. I'm not expressing my... I mean, there are a lot of wonderful people here. But there are a lot of really horrible things that have happened to these people here. West Virginians that I've seen are extremely xenophobic because of what's happened to their ancestors. By these big companies that have come here, and it's just... It's all been a minus, no plus. They take it. They've not given. And they've ruined a lot of natural beauty, water, everything like that. And no amount of 3 month tourism, whitewater rafting, or the people who are up on a snowshoe, or wherever the hell they can ski, that won't make a particle of difference because all those things are just seasonal service industries. They don't give any public jobs that can provide salaries to enhance the public education system of the state. They don't. The only way these teachers can get any kind of money, as far as a raise is concerned, is from the fracking people. That's it. That's the revenue stream. Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. I don't mean to be preachy.
But the fact that, look, I mean, there are ways out, okay? There are ways out.
Well, I hope so.
But you've got to pursue them, okay? You've got to have people of vision who pursue these things. And, for instance, the West Virginia Office of Economic Development, all they know how to do is go sniffing after gas and oil and sniffing after coal. And
well, that's
clean coal and coal. That's all they've
I've
ever.
I've got a good friend who's on one of those development things, Joe Browse. You know Joe?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he's told me. And he's now chairman of it.
But you know what?
He doesn't mind any mention of his name.
You need people going looking for things that hillbillies would be good at doing in the first place.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, as far as this state is concerned, one of the things that I see could be found at Tamarack.
What?
And places like that of the cottage industries.
And we have tried that, and some people are more successful than others.
Wait a minute, just a minute, please. And look at Homer Laughlin. You're not going to find any finer china in the world than what's made up there at the Homer Laughlin Company. I mean, I've got so much fiesta wear around here, it could sink the Titanic. I love it.
It's beautiful stuff. It really
I heard it from my mother. That's how I got turned on to it. And Homer Lawson, for example, they have exquisite stuff. And that's another good example.
Well, West Virginia used to have a vibrant glass and ceramics industry because of the nature
of... still do. Blinko glass? Yes, sir.
Well, it's been it's been more vibrant in the past. But that's that's part of the decline of American manufacturing all around.
You've got quality of craftsmanship here that you don't have other places.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. What I'm saying though is that we've got to pursue a strategy that has something in the portfolio besides hydrocarbons, Jim.
Well, no,
things that can be extracted or blasted from the earth.
I know. The other bit, what I was saying, I talked to a lot of people who live in different parts of the country, and I've talked to them about the cottage industries here and about the porcelain industry here, Homer Lawson, and they have no idea. They said, really? And I said, next time you're online, you're looking for a gift for somebody, you take a look at the Homer Lawson catalog and what they offer and the colors and vibrancy of it. I mean, that's just what they don't know. I think we could do a hell of a lot more to expose the rest of the country to some of the beautiful products that are made in this state. And we're talking about woodworking. We're talking about metalworking. We're talking about all kinds of things. It's just incredible, the potential there. I mean, you're looking for a way out. I tried to show you how I feel.
I understand that. There are little things that might be big things that need to be done. You know, and I know this is going to make me sound like some, you know, dude type, but I'm really not. The first thing that needs to happen, the key that goes in to the lock and turns and the tumblers move and the door opens, is the legalization of recreational cannabis.
Well, that's just not going to happen anytime soon.
Second to that is you've got to have some sort of a recognition that everybody who's ever smoked a doobie is not incapable of doing a job.
Bob, until that federal law changes that they passed back in 1937 or whatever it was that destroyed the uses of hemp, until they get that thing off the books, it ain't gonna change. You have certain isolated spots or different tolerance zones, but until that federal law changes, it ain't gonna happen. It just ain't gonna happen. That is the key that's gonna turn the tumbler in the lock, is the change of that stupid law. I mean, what do these people think that they use for rope? Before DuPont came and developed all these plastic fibers they could use, okay? The very parachute that put H.W. Bush in the Pacific wasn't made out of Dacron or whatever.
Made out of silk.
Or nylon or xenon. It was made out of hemp. It was made out of grown hemp. And it made fine rope. And they make fabric from it. You have all types of products that come from hemp besides somebody rolling a doobie. But you've got these chemical companies.
Well, but Jim, you said it's a matter of...
They're the ones behind... Just a minute, please. They're the ones, these goddamn chemical companies, who made these artificial fibers. They don't want hemp around. They want it classified as evil, although with the weed and its roots in hell. And they want to put as many presentations of reefer madness as they possibly can and say it's going to make you go crazy and shoot somebody. I'll tell you one damn thing right now. It sure never had that effect on me. And I stand by my zirconium and trusted tweezers, and I'll ride my painted pony and just raise it up and wax it down with my dental floss, as well as my electric bomb.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Well, Jim, it has.
How did I get on there?
I don't know, but I tell you what, anytime zircon encrusted tweezers come into the conversation, you know you're on a streak. But you have yourself a good evening. Phones are ringing. I'll keep the program. I'll keep the conversation going. But I appreciate your input.
Well, I hope you really do, because I.
No,
really
I do. I do.
Say.
I do.
I've been meaning to say this for an awfully long time.
I understand.
A lot of what I say is just, you know, a lot of camp and stuff like that, and I. And
no, but this is.
Is
deadly serious stuff.
It is. And these are ways out of it. But like I say, as far as our hip problem is concerned, they got to overturn that federal law. Until they do, it ain't going to happen.
Because you think the state legislature won't act and do the right thing.
Oh, of course. I mean, they're not going to do anything here that's in contravention to a federal statute. And plus,
they're not going to do what Colorado, Massachusetts, D.C., Washington, Oregon, California.
And I'm not trying to prolong this conversation, but I can tell you another thing. Do you think the DEA wants to have pot legalized or hemp legalized? Uh-uh. You look at the statistics on how much budget they get because of the prosecution of marijuana people.
I have a we'll persist in this on some other day, but I have to think there's a way around. But I appreciate it, Jim. You have yourself a good evening.
Likewise.
All right, take care. Bye now. And hey, big thanks going out to everybody who's jumped in this evening. You have proven a humongous help. Steve and Miss Karen, little Cletus and little Twiggy, thanks for bringing me up to speed with the Nunberg situation. I don't know if I did, but yeah, I tried. Thanks to Colin. Thank you, Colin, very kindly. Thanks to Libby. Thanks to Brother Deacon Asa and Laborman for their challenges. Thank you to our buddy V.T. Blom in the chat room. Thank you so very kindly. Thank you, one and all. We only got $25 to go. Oh, wait, maybe we don't. We've only got $25 to go to finish fundraising for the evening, which is pretty monumental and pretty amazing. Now, my only point is, and I don't think this is controversial at all. We know, for instance, that we could take a big old whopping bite out of our opioid problem in West Virginia by legalizing cannabis. That data is already out there. It's incontrovertible. The money to stabilize PEIA would be in legalized cannabis, and nobody would have to be, because there is a very cynical game at play here, and that is, as I mentioned before, to pit the West Virginia teachers against everybody else by making them sign on to forced pooling in order to stabilize PEIA, Public Employees Insurance Agency, because that's the problem. PEIA premiums were rising so fast that it wasn't amounting to teachers not getting a raise, but effectively teachers having their pay cut to keep up with their own health care. Okay? So you could stabilize PEIA with the tax revenues from cannabis. There would be an economic force multiplier in the construction industry, building the hotel infrastructure that frankly does not exist in places like Fayetteville and Oak Hill and Beckley, that would and as well as the jobs working dispensaries and so forth. It's all there. Then you can start working on other aspects of it. And start bringing in people who would be interested. You know, you could prop up the school system itself to a certain extent. And then you start diversifying away from coal. And if you've ever got visionary political leadership, you can tell coal to go fuck itself. That those are jobs that we do not need or want. And then this state can finally 155 years after its creation, poor little West Virginia could finally, perhaps, begin to understand, to come to terms with both its past and its future, and moreover, have a future. Had a note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, what's the difference? So, the Taliban kept blowing up cultural landmarks with explosives. 45 destroys our cultural landmarks with a pen. What the fuck is the difference? Not much, except for the fact that the people that that swan around with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, well, they use explosives too, and a hell of a lot more of them. We've got a little chunk of Appalachia right here where I live that's a national park, and it's a constant struggle to keep the fucking coal industry out of it, and the frackers, and the drillers, and the gassers, and the various and sundry assorted poisoners. By the way, you legalize cannabis, recreational cannabis, and what is at best a six-month tourism economy becomes 12. Ta-da! And there really are people in the legislature. There's some who, you know, while they, you know, they still have to bow a knee of fealty to the coal industry, they do acknowledge that it is well past time that this state became the first one in the Central Atlantic region to fully legalize recreational cannabis and open up that economic or put a spark to that economic tinder. Makes sense to me. Brother Deacon Asa disagrees a little with Jim. No, Jim, Oklahoma is the asshole of the country. West Virginia is more like the gonads. It's all the same. No, it's all the same neighborhood. And unless you keep it clean, bad things can grow there. But there you go. All right, let's check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
I think the point of anatomy that we're trying to locate and pinpoint is the area at which a woman delivering a child has the procedure known as an episiotomy. And I can't remember the name of the region, but
it's perineum.
Between the butthole.
The perineum.
Perineum. There you go.
I remember W. Bush White House spokesperson, Dana Perineal.
Yeah, okay. We work with each other and can rely on each other to keep things straight.
Also known in redneck circles as the taint.
Yes, of course. Okay, it is interesting how stuff works out timing-wise and topic-wise on this program and in life.
You just said a mouthful, buddy.
Yes, I often do. I've got a couple of quick observations and an idea, and kudos even for Jim. So here's where we are. He's on the right track in terms of helping West Virginia in terms of exporting goods and services. Okay, so there's that. And then looking at the earlier topic that you were discussing during the Bobathon, the filibuster, the notion of the coal extraction at Bear's Ears and what is the other one? The
Grand Staircase. Escalante, yes.
Okay, so the other night, and I'll tie this together, I promise. I'm going to pull a Gene Shepherd, if you remember his radio show.
Oh, very
He ultimately ties it all up together at the end. Okay, so you're mentioning the plans for coal extraction from the preserve areas in Utah. And to be honest with you, Bob, with the madness of Trump, lo, these many months, I haven't been able to pay attention to everything. And one of the things that got set aside, attention-wise, was this business of bringing a coal extraction efforts into Bear's Ears and the Grand Staircase. So I wondered where they were in the state of Utah. And turns out they're right where I need them to be for purposes of this call. They're in the southern part of the state. Okay, so bookmark that. Then the other night, I'm flipping through YouTube, trying to find something fun to watch, and I happen upon a 20-some-year-old magazine show that used to be on ABC television called Turning Point, and the episode titled Cover Up at Ground Zero from 1994. And I think Peter Jennings was the host. And the focus of this was on a group of people in southern Utah known as the Downwinders. And who these people were are the citizens of southern Utah who, through no fault of their own, were victimized by the 1950s and early 60s open-air blast tests of our nuclear weaponry in nearby Nevada, okay? And they suffered all manner of health consequences, up to and including death, for simply living where they lived, downwind of the radioactive debris and fallout. Okay, so there's that, all right? I'm thinking that your group there in West Virginia, who are the activists trying to keep mountaintop removal from spreading destruction, needs to export their expertise to the folks in southern Utah who benefit from Bear's Ears and Escalante Staircase, your Grand Staircase, because they're not that far from St. George, Utah. So the folks in St. George who have survived, the families and descendants, if any, of the Downwinders, need to hook up with your group in West Virginia who are against mountaintop removal, because if they're going to open parts of these parks and nature preserves to coal extraction, you know they're not going to do it the old school way, digging holes and going in, you know, with carts and electronic picks and shovels. They're going to probably try to do the most destructive way of doing it that they can possibly come up with. Okay, so maybe West Virginia needs to export some of its anti-coal extraction expertise along with the Fiesta wear. So is any of this making any sense?
No, it does. It does. But the thing is, in situations like this, where activism is involved, and this opens another door, and you've done that most expertly, you don't just march in and say, now, see here, let me tell you how it is, because that is extremely off-putting. I can tell you as a hillbilly, it is extremely off-putting, because we've had the smart people come in and tell us, you know, now, see here, you hillbillies, here's how you fight the coal industry. And, you know, these are people who have never had who've never had to deal with it, but, you know, they're experts. So
And I get that nobody wants.
So it's a matter of opening that door, getting the invitation, and once again, it's also a matter of activists. And this is the door that you opened. Did you watch the Academy Awards last night?
Yes, I did. I am so out of the loop when it comes to viewing movies in a theater. I figured it out. The last movie that I actually walked into a theater and sat down with a bag of popcorn to watch was in 2008, okay? This isn't to say that I don't watch recent movies. I see them online, sitting here in my underwear, okay? But yeah, to answer your question, I did watch the Oscars last night.
Okay, so there's this moment. And in the midst of all the other heady issues that were being addressed, I think this would just kind of blew by. I looked for the clip today. I couldn't find it. It's when Dave Chappelle showed up.
Oh, yeah.
And he was introducing one of the, I think it was the last song, maybe, of the night.
Yeah.
But he showed up, and he made this remark, and he said, nobody ever rolls up in a fancy car and rolls down the window and says, yeah, I got this car doing activism work. I made this money doing activism work.
Yeah. I remember that. That was a great moment.
And I just kind of sat there and went, son of a gun, how about that? because
Chappelle is a very wise man.
Yes, he is, and he's a very observant man. And the fact of the matter is, the reason I kind of lit up on that was the other thing that grassroots movements don't have is money. Okay.
Oh, I know. When
I go and my colleagues and I go to D.C. to do what we do, or when people lay down in front of bulldozers and shit like that, most of those people are not getting paid, and the people who are getting paid aren't getting paid a living wage. Okay. There's nobody who does that I know of who does activism on the ground who doesn't sweat some aspect of their existence. You know, choose between, you know, oh, I need tires this month, or shall I eat food? I got to pay the phone bill, or I got to pay the power bill, so that means the phone gets cut off. I got to pay the gas bill, so that means I don't get my prescriptions this month. And activists generally are not the healthiest people in the world either. And so, and because they eat it, sleep it, live it, drink it, think it, dream it, they never get away from it, and it tends to chew on them, and it tends to consume them. And so when Dave Chappelle said, yeah, nobody rolls up and says, yeah, I got this Mercedes Benz from my activism work, no. And so when we talk about, oh, it'd be nice if we could get, you know what, it would be great. And I've had a few rare occasions to do where the funding was provided to make it possible for me to have those conversations. If I had, you know, if I had my own independent wealth, I'd go, yeah, sure, let's go do that. But I don't. And the Ake campaign is as poor as a church mouse. Coal River Mountain Watch struggles to stay alive. That's why I ask people, you know, when you do business with Amazon, go to smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch to receive some small portion of the proceeds from your purchases. And it's small indeed, but it's something. Okay?
Well, the idea of enlisting the folks there in West Virginia, not all of them, but maybe one or two, or at least open a means of communication with the people in southern Utah. At the very least, the people in southern Utah who see the red flag that's been waved by the demented circus peanut in lifting the protections of Bear's Ears and Grand, at the very least, the people of St. George, Utah, which on the map appears to be maybe an hour's drive away, need to get up there and talk to whatever activists there may be, budding or otherwise, and say, look, we've been down this road before where government action has actually maimed and killed fellow Utahns, okay? And if you look at that episode of Turning Point on YouTube, Cover Up at Ground Zero, there are a whole line of people with tragic, sad, true instances in their own lives of relatives dying at the hands of government behaving in a manner not consistent with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for these people. So at the very least, the people at the two park areas need to consult with the folks in St. George to get some, if not marching orders, at least talking points that will move them in a good direction. And if the folks in West Virginia can help out, good for them too.
Yeah. And all of these things have so many ifs and but fors and wrapped in it. It's hard to make it go anywhere. But when you see something like the teacher's strike going, you know, this is a wildcat strike. Okay.
I know.
And that's a big deal. And there is every possibility in the world that somewhere down the line, somebody's going to try to make these teachers pay for it, as opposed to just paying for the privilege of, you know, being allowed to teach school.
Yeah,
right,
but
now
you look,
because that's what they're doing right now. They're paying for the privilege of being allowed to teach school.
But you look at the alternative in the case of the West Virginia teachers, and also in the case of the people who are yet to be, hopefully not, but maybe yet to be victimized by the coal extraction industry in southern Utah. The alternative for both groups is, what happens if they don't take whatever stand and action that they can manage? They get further victimized in one way or another.
Well, there's always, yeah, give them an inch and they take a planet. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, because ultimately it comes down to, who are we in the matter of the question, what's at stake here? And if it's your very life, as may be the case with the folks in southern Utah and the coal extraction, and as it may be in West Virginia, not only with the teachers, their livelihood, but the students and families and future of West Virginia, it may not be your life, but it's definitely your livelihood, and it's definitely the futures of your children, which, to hear the Republicans tell it, when it comes to deficit spending, we've got to remember our children and grandchildren. Well, let's remember them then, and pay teachers according to the good that they do, not think of them as a goddamn afterthought or a nuisance.
I may have missed something you said, maybe Isaac did, or maybe you misspoke. You didn't say that Utah was an hour away from West Virginia.
Oh, no. I said that it appears on Google Maps that Bears Ears and the other park are at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half from St. George, Utah, where the downwinders lived, who were affected by the open-air nuclear blasts,
right,
in Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know West. I know enough geography. That West Virginia's at least a, God, a good,
oh,
day.
Oh, no,
and
no,
a
no.
Half.
I tried to fly there one day. That was a hell of a trip. Got up at 3 o'clock in the morning, drove down the mountain, got a text from Delta telling me that the pilot and crew were insufficiently rested, so we'd have to wait an hour to get off the ground, and that would make me miss my flight to Salt Lake City in Atlanta. So it turned out to be, and I was supposed to be in Salt Lake City by 1 o'clock that afternoon, you know, mountain time zone or whatever the hell it is. So it wound up Charleston to Atlanta, Atlanta to JFK, JFK to Utah, and I thought I was going to lose my mind. And I got there at 1 o'clock in the morning next day. I could have been in China by then.
In terms of comparable driving times, and they're not exactly comparable, but close, when I moved from Cincinnati, Ohio, to San Diego in the summer of 2000, in my U-Haul truck with all my earthly possessions, two cockatiels and a calico cat, it was a three-day trip. And I was pushing it, I mean, to the extent that I could. Plus, there was a truck breakdown where they had to, I forget where the hell I was, probably in New Mexico or some godforsaken place. Something blew under the hood, and they had to come and replace it, and that added, all told, maybe 3 or 4 hours.
Beautiful.
To the journey. It was two
cockatiels and a calico cat. Sounds like it should be part of a song lyric, or maybe a short story title, or possibly the title of a one act play. So hang on to that, Scott. Two cockatiels and a calico cat.
I have been swearing for years that I'm going to write a book about my adventures and misadventures. And that would be part. That would be at least a good chapter. Just moving from Ohio.
It sounds like it could be part of a John Prine song or something. You know, two cockatiels and a calico cat. There was something in the rhyme, the scansion, rhythm, meter. Who knows? I don't know. But I was going to mention, you know, there are more teachers in West Virginia. Just teachers. Probably twice as many, maybe three or four times as many, as there are mountaintop removal workers. And yet this government will, the state government will debase and abase and embarrass and ruin itself over that little tiny handful of mountaintop removal workers. But they can't seem to find a way to give these teachers a 5% raise and keep them from being bankrupted by their fucking health insurance. So that kind of puts everything in perspective, I think.
Well, and it's not just the politicians that encourage that misbehavior. Ultimately, it's the voters who keep voting them in that have some responsibility. And let's remember that come November. If you take an honest look and don't buy into the bullshit and find out who's responsible for a lot of this crap that you have to deal with there, maybe, you know, change your R to a D for all the good it'll do. I mean, given the state of the Democratic Party in West Virginia. But what the hell? I mean, it's like I'll pull a page from Trump's book talking to the black folks during the run up to the election. What can you lose? You know? And I would say that then to the West Virginia voters. You've seen how life is for 30 years or 20 years with the Republicans in charge or the wishy-washy Democrats. Why not do something different when you vote? And, you know, it's like chicken soup. It may not help, but it couldn't hurt.
Chicken-flavored glop for the starving peasant masses of the United States, yes.
And only a penny more per can, thanks to the tariffs. So I think I covered everything, and it really blew me away when you were talking about that today, because my little mind got to worrying, and I said, my goodness, this is falling together quite nicely. And then your call with Jim and the state of West Virginia, economically and otherwise, and I said, well, this certainly does tie together, at least in my mind.
Well, it's amazing how that happens here, isn't it?
Well, it's that synchronicity and the fact that there are forces at play about which we are basically unaware in the great cosmos or the great universal mind, I think is what it has been called in the past. And we look at it sort of gobsmacked as being synchronicity or something that we can't quite put our finger on, but there's something at play that's pulling a lot of these divergent forces together in various parts of the country.
Well, I watched clips today because I haven't gotten around to the movie yet. I had a chance to watch it on the plane, but Ferg had my headphones, so I was out of luck. Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. I watched clips today, and I'm now convinced. I'm not offering this. I'm just speculating. But my God, it seems like Sister Carol Baker must have been a script consultant on that film, because there are a couple of scenes with Frances McDormand when it sounds like what you imagine it would be like to have Carol pissed off at you.
Yeah. Well, I got that in her acceptance speech last night. I also have not seen the film.
One of the funny, somebody apparently stole her Oscar last night, Frances McDormand's.
I heard about that. I didn't get the details, but they caught the guy, whoever it was.
Well, but before they caught the guy, I saw a tweet from some wag who said, give it back, Meryl, you've got enough already.
Well, that the little deal with Jodie Foster and... God, I can't think of the actress who was with her when they did their...
Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, yeah, Jennifer Lawrence. And Jennifer Lawrence said, in regard to the crutches that Jodie Foster came out on, you know, what happened, and she said Meryl Streep and kind of nodded down.
It was Meryl I Tanya'd me. Mm-hmm. Or Meryl Tanya'd mm-hmm. me. And then Jennifer Lawrence said, yeah, she tripped me one time, too, making reference to her falling down on the red carpet. You know what was surprising to me about the whole thing? And I don't watch awards programs. I don't, but I just felt like, probably should. And, you know, nothing else on, so what the hell. I've got an antenna attached to the TV, and, you know, digital signal apparently doesn't reach very far in the mountains. But
no, no.
That's neither here nor there. It struck. I mean, there were a lot of undercurrents and some just straight up statements. But this was probably, in many ways, a more politically subdued Oscars than I've heard of in a while. And it was almost as though. I don't know what kind of impulse to ascribe to it, Scott, but it felt like maybe people were either coming to terms with having to deal with the Trump presidency, or had just dialed back the vitriol a little bit because they were afraid that Dana Lush might shoot them. I don't know what it was, but did you get that sense of slightly subdued last night?
Not subdued, but unless I missed it when it happened, if it did happen, I don't believe Trump's name was uttered during the course of the proceedings, unless it was.
No, but there were a lot of Viva Mexicos and some references to walls. I caught those. The one direct jab that I thought was pretty precious was when Jimmy Kimmel said, "We don't make films like Call Me By Your Name for the sake of art. We make them to make Mike Pence sad."
It was for some reason it didn't get a good rating. And I thought it was perfectly acceptable given our times, you know?
What, the film or the remark?
Well, the Oscars as a whole this year.
Viewership was down 20%.
Yeah. And as far as the best picture, I didn't have any horse in the race because I hadn't seen any of the nominees and had heard of most of them, but hadn't actually seen them. I'm not sure I am fully... unless I misunderstand the plot and the premise of The Shape of Water, essentially it's a hearing-impaired cleaning woman who bumps uglies with a amphibian-slash-human prototype creature. And I don't know that that is a movie that would immediately grab me in terms of interest.
Oh, I'm very interested in seeing it because I like Guillermo del Toro's sense of the fantastic. Now I get it. I just got a note from Hoghead in the chat room. I thought the same damn thing, Bob. Did you see where she browbeat that priest? It was classic. Reminded me of Carol right away. So I thought Hoghead was talking about the ceremony. But no, that's one of those scenes in Three Billboards that made me go, Carol had something to do with this film. Had to have. Just had to have.
Well, there are a number of these films that I'm definitely waiting to show up on my home screen once they start streaming in one of the venues that I subscribe to. But, of course, now I'm old enough to remember when Bob Hope was the host, and then Carson, Johnny Carson, and then Billy Crystal. They ought to bring back Letterman. I thought he did a fine job that one year that he worked the room. But that's just me. I'm a Dave fan from way back.
And that one Johnny Carson book I read, apparently one of the Academy Award ceremonies was he hated doing it, but it, whatever. But I want to see Three Billboards. Well, I want to see all those films. I've never seen Get Out, and you know why? Because I don't like scary movies.
Really?
Really. I mean, I don't mind suspense. I don't mind, you know, but. You know, things that set out just to scare my ass. Mm-mm. No, no.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm going to have to see that. But I was proud for, you know, I don't know him. He doesn't know me, but I was proud for Jordan Peele. Very proud. And it, it, just because the film, it's A, he's a genius, and B, the film itself sort of went against the grain of, you know, the art film that gets nominated.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of beautiful. But I want to see them all. I caught a clip on the from the Onion today that I didn't know this about Call Me by Your Name, but you're a peach. I had no idea you could do that to a peach. But we'll just leave it at that because we got to get out of here. Scott, have yourself a good evening.
I will, Bob. You too. And we'll talk again at some point.
All right. Sounds good. Later. It's our buddy Scott and Punky out San Diego way. Asa notes, hell, with all his stories, Scott could do a 3-volume series, Life with Scott, Life Without Scott, and Life Despite Scott. And hey, thanks to Joy and Will in Chicago. We actually made the fundraising goal this evening, which is awesome. That's so we're 5 days into March and we're even. So hallelujah. Thank you everybody who jumped in. Thanks for the challenges from Brother Deacon Asa and Laborman. Thank you so very much. Okay. That makes me feel better. Subject Get Out. Matt in San Francisco says, I felt the film was more suspenseful than scary. You'll be all right. Okay, then. Good. James says, Get Out. I don't like scary, but this is a deranged black comedy. So, okay. And I think he's referring to, well, never mind. All right. There's no chainsaws or gratuitous don't go into the basement kind of. Yeah. Then again, years and years ago, I watched The Blair Witch Project and just thought it was stupid. Anyhow. It's time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks for however it is you participate in the program. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going night after night after night. Thank you so much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox, down in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, a group of those people who, you know, didn't get that fancy car, you know, with their activism work. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.